You're listening to the Big Three of B2B Leadership Podcast with Mike Faherty, where world-class business leaders share their secrets for personal, organizational, and market growth. Gain powerful insights from industry leaders that have been tested by the fire.
Welcome, everyone, to the Big Three of B2B Leadership. I'm joined today by John McTighe. And John is got an amazing background, an amazing career. And I really look forward to talking to him and getting his insight on marketing and business growth. John was co-founder of Kuno Creative and co-owner, I should say, of Kuno Creative and helped lead that agency to diamond level status with HubSpot and even HubSpot Partner of the Year. And since then, he's gone on to do a lot of really exciting things like write books. And he's got a new venture around helping people map out customer journey. And so he's got a lot of insight and a lot of experience. I'm really looking forward to having a good discussion with you. So welcome, John. Welcome to the Big Three of B2B Leadership.
Thanks, Mike. It's a real honor. And I'm excited to awesome. Jump in and start yakking about sales and marketing.
That's awesome. Well, thanks, John. So I know you've been doing a lot of work lately on the customer journey. And speaking of journeys, I really like to start with just a little background. And so I'm dying to know. I haven't ever had the opportunity to ask you the question. So can you tell me a little bit how we go from geophysics to CTO to agency owner? That's probably an all-time unique path. At least it appears on the outside. So maybe you can just share with me a little bit about your experience and how you came to get into the world of B2B marketing and inbound marketing.
Well, it's funny. You and I came to the Houston area from different paths. Mine was in the oil and gas industry, which is probably the majority of people in Houston, I would say. Maybe not now, but back in the day. So I hired on at Shell Oil as a geophysicist, but really my job was more about processing data. So that's what geophysics is. You know, you bring in a bunch of seismic data and you try to figure out where the oil and gas is. And so my job was trying out some new technology at the time, which was very new back in the early 80s. Long story short, I was into the data business for a very long time. And in fact, my kind of career path migrated to being data manager for Shell Oil. I was actually, my job was to merge all the databases that they had across exploration and production and, you know, all kinds of things. So I've been into the data business for a long time. And, you know, one of those common sort of layoff things that happened in the oil business and still does came along, and I decided to get out. So I went to work for software companies in a sales and really sort of product marketing role. And these guys were taking that technology and rolling it out to the rest of the world. So it was fun and exciting, and I got to travel around the world. And I learned sales and I learned product marketing from doing that with it. It was usually a two-man team, a sales guy and me, and I would do the product demonstrations and they would sell the product. And I fell in love with it. I mean, it was a perfect marriage of sort of knowing your product, knowing the information behind it, and just loving to get up and gab in front of people. So that's how I got started in sales and marketing. And then I jumped to a couple of other companies. Some of them were kind of big, like you may have heard of Raytheon and Schlumberger. So I worked for some big companies in addition to Shell, but I also worked for some startups. So I joined a consulting firm back then that was going around the world helping people learn how to use workstations. So all sort of the same idea. And then at one point, I got tired of the whole industry because of the ups and downs, you know, the instability. And this new thing called the internet had come along. So, and this was back in 1998. And we were just getting into PCs and, you know, workstations and, you know, actually using the internet and building websites. So I got into that. I taught myself how to build websites from scratch. using just basic HTML and CSS. And I got more and more into it. I built my own little CMS, you know, for building out websites for customers. Had my own little consulting company. And then another thing that was new was kind of communities had grown on the internet. And I met a guy from Kuno Creative who had just started up this little agency in Ohio and was looking for someone to build websites. And we found each other and we hit it off. And one thing led to another and I joined him as his partner. So Chris Knipper was his name, or still is. And 14 years later, you know, we had built, for 14 years, we built this agency up to, I think, a maximum of about 60 people and diamond level HubSpot partner. We got into inbound marketing really early on in the business before it was really kind of a thing. So that was our niche. And, you know, now it's more well-versed agency and does a lot of different things. But 3 years ago, I decided, you know, it was time to move on. I think I had outgrown the agency world and they had outgrown me. So we parted company and I went off and wrote a book. And since then, I've been sort of going back to what I learned there, which was how to help B2B companies, you know, fix problems, basically. You know, why is my pipeline not working? Why am I not getting new customers? Why am I losing the customers I have? You know, kind of answering questions like that. So that has led me to this customer journey thing that we'll get into, but that was kind of, you know, my thinking has gone kind of backwards towards first principles, you know, the why questions rather than the tactical questions. So I don't specialize in technology anymore or data. It's more about why you're not attracting customers or keeping them.
We're going to spend some time on that because I'm really interested about your insight around that area. But before we get away from the agency, because it's too rich an experience to leave too quickly. So I'm curious from your standpoint, what are maybe the one or two pivotal decisions that were made maybe in the early days that really helped accelerate your growth? Maybe they were decisions, maybe they were just principles that guided you guys through that process.
Well, I think the first one was a joint decision because I was pushing websites. And back then it was kind of a novel thing. It was like, yeah, I don't know if I really need a website. We kind of do things the way we've always been doing them. And we went all in on websites. That was really all we did in the first few years, other than traditional marketing design and brochures and all that stuff, which we did really, really well. We started really focusing on websites. So that was big and it helped us grow pretty fast because as everyone knows, it really took off quickly. And then, you know, 3-4 years down the road, if you didn't have a website, you didn't have a business. You know, it's kind of that quick. And then I think the second one was inbound marketing, which was another big jump. It was another big risk because now you're saying, we're going to pretty much abandon traditional sales and marketing the way we've been doing them with direct marketing and direct sales. And we're going to switch this thing around and try to attract people with blogs and social media and that kind of thing. So that was somewhat of a revolution in the kind of the early 2000s. And it really took off when HubSpot came into being in what, 2008 and 2009. And we, again, made a gamble. So all credit to my partner, because this wasn't an easy decision. And we went all in on inbound. So I'm not taking credit for this. It was kind of a wild ass idea at the time. And, you know, I give a lot of credit to my partner for having the guts and maybe the, you know, the foresight to see how, you know, this was going to work out. And it did.
You know, you've been involved in countless B2B company engagements through your time, through those 14 years, helping those companies. They all want the same thing, right? They all want growth. You know, they don't want a website. They don't want an inbound marketing strategy. They want growth. And so what were some of the common challenges and common sort of mistakes maybe that you saw organizations and leaders of those organizations make that got in their own way of growth? Were there things that you saw people doing and organizations doing consistently that you thought, you know, that's going to hold them back? Was there some lesson learned there?
Well, I think the biggest one was, and it was from us as well as from them, is not committing to the process, whatever that process was. So they would hire an agency, expect them to turn things around in a few months, you know, and just gauge them, let's say 3-6 months from now on whether revenues have gone up 20%, which was never realistic. It isn't now, you know, you can't turn things around that fast. Doesn't matter what you do, but there wasn't a vision on their end, and it's our fault too, because we didn't really convey that vision to them and convince them to make a commitment to the process and to, you know, the budget, and also to involving their own people, because you can't do it alone. You can't, really just can't outsource marketing. You know, you have to be involved. And I think that was number one, two, and three. I mean, that was really what got us every time. And anytime we ever lost a client, it was because of something along those lines.
So you said there were really three things that I heard there. There was one, their expectations were not realistic. They thought it was going to happen too quickly or quicker than was realistic. Secondly, they underinvested often. They would underinvest in the marketing program.
Yes.
And the third thing I thought I heard you say was that they underestimated the requirements and the input and support that they would need from their own internal marketing people to drive the success, right?
Yes. I'll give you really a good example of that. So we hired on with a very large company, a big mega conglomerate, which is probably unrealistic for us, but we did it anyway. And we didn't understand their process. So we would pump out blog posts and, you know, we were doing fantastic content for them, but because of their regulatory requirements and internal processes, it would take months to get things approved. And we'd go months down the road without anything to show because of this process. And so we basically got fired, you know, because we had no results to show. So, you know, shame on us for not asking about that and trying to figure that out early, but, you know, shame on them for being slow and not understanding what we were trying to do. So that was a good example right there. You've got to find out up front before you sign on the dotted line.
Right. So when you talk with businesses now who might be considering engaging with an agency to help them manage their marketing programs and to help them build a growth strategy and a program to grow, let's assume for a moment that they've picked a great agency to work with and that they're capable. If they were to ask you, how long should I give this before I know whether or not we're on the right track? What would you tell them in terms of setting the right, if you could set that expectation correctly for a B2B company that's looking for, you know, looking for a growth strategy and they've employed an agency to help them get there, what would you tell them?
Well, back then I would have told them at least a year. So you're looking at, you know, 12 months minimum to really see the needle move. I think things are different now, though, because most agencies are being hired to do specific things, like fix the CRM or, you know, implement a podcast. You know, people are being much more focused now, both on both ends. You know, I think agencies are trying to differentiate themselves, so they're really going to focus on one industry and maybe even one thing. Maybe it's just video marketing, for example. So in that case, I think the expectations should be somewhat different because the outcomes are different. You're not going to turn around the entire growth strategy just by implementing video. It might have an impact. So I think the key thing there is really communicating and negotiating what outcomes are realistic at all and how fast, how quickly they could be turned around. So it does depend on, you know, what your specialization is. But I'd still say that if it's just sort of a general content marketing approach like we did back in the 90s and the early 2000s, you know, you got to give it some time because you're up against everybody else in the world that has a TikTok account. You know, you're not getting a lot of visibility no matter what you do, no matter who you are. It's going to take time. So I'd say 12 months, and you better be realistic about that too.
Right. And investing the appropriate amount, right? Really having a logical and thought through plan that says if I want 20 or 30 or 50% growth, then realistically what's going to be required from an investment standpoint, because customers cost money to acquire. Right.
Sure. Absolutely.
So once we know that, the quicker we can get to the answer of what's it cost to acquire the customer, then it's relatively simple math to figure out, okay, well, how much do I need to invest to get the growth that I want?
Exactly. And
I think a lot of times we'll work with clients that we really have to help them sort of frame that part of the equation. They think, well, I'll make this, as long as I'm doing the marketing activity, I'm covering that base, then the growth is just going to happen. And sometimes that's not exactly a one-to-one, right? We can get some incremental improvement based on the budget, but more budget often means faster growth or more customers. And so as long as the strategy is sound, right, then it just becomes, you know, I like to joke that it becomes coin operated at that point, right? So you put in a dollar and hopefully you get $2 or $3 or $5 out. If you've got that mapped out just right.
So especially if it's a partnership, if they're creating say 50% of the content because you've right. taught them how to do it,
right,
you get them on video and they know their customers, you're going to be far more successful with that formula than if you just try to sit outside and guess what people want to hear on the other end. And you know, that kind of approach is pretty much gone away. It's become much, much tougher.
Well, I think you would probably tell me that the first step in that process, or one of the first steps in that process, is mapping out the customer journey to make sure that all of that is aligned, that the content and the personas are aligned. And so that it's a foundational piece, I think you believe, to building a sound growth strategy for a company. So tell me a little bit about you know, your business around the customer journey maestro, and specifically, you know, why is this so important to you?
Well, it's important to me because I think it is, as you just said, it's foundational to an entire go-to-market strategy. So I think we in B2B are so obsessed now with technology and, you know, squeezing the juice out of the end of the funnel, so to speak, that we've forgotten about how to get good customers in the door in the first place and keep them there. So, you know, that's in this pandemic period, it's become even more important to really understand your customers, regardless of where they are in the journey, especially if they actually are your customers. So let's talk first about what the customer journey is. And it's kind of interesting. I mean, people all have their own definition, And I think most marketers and probably salespeople would say one of two things. It's your marketing funnel. A marketer would say that. And a salesperson would say it's your pipeline. So it's really kind of two parts of the same thing. And the interesting thing about a funnel is that it's all about volume. It's about putting a lot of leads into the top of the funnel and marketing them and getting out the customers at the bottom end, right? A pipeline is really kind of the same thing, except it's at the bottom of that funnel. It's more about, okay, we're getting qualified leads in, and now let's nurture them until they be and work them until they become customers. And then we'll just throw it over the wall to customer success. So there are two problems with that. One, nobody wants to be treated like as a statistic in a volume. Nobody wants to be part of your funnel or your pipeline. People buy from you, right? So the customer journey is about people. It's not about volume. There's nothing that's measured in the customer journey that's about how many leads you get or how many SQLs or how many deals or how, you know, that it, those kinds of ways of looking at customers are still out there, but I think they're outdated and I think they're obsolete. So we have to start thinking about the customer journey from a person's point of view. And there are multiple people in B2B, right? So you have what you might call a champion, someone who understands what their problem is looking for a solution, finds you, kind of, you know, makes you guys into the hero and carries you through to the goal line. And then is there, you know, past that sales point. So that person, and then they have bosses and they have other people in the buying team. So that there are multiple journeys in a sale or in a customer lifetime. And the point of this whole thing is that there are two perspectives. There's their perspective. You know, what am I doing? How am I getting from point A to point Z? And there's your perspective. That's how you look at this process and what you do to meet those people where they are and give them what they want. It's kind of that simple. So a customer journey map is a way of representing that process, both from their perspective and from yours. And you need their perspective first. It's like a map of where all the McDonald's are between here and Bakersfield and how you're going to get there. How are you going to meet them there? Where they are? You know, what are you going to say to them when you get to the McDonald's? So that's the concept of it. And the whole rationale for doing it is that you're making their journey as frictionless, as positive as possible. So they'll choose you. You make that process easier for them. You give them more information. They want to work with you at the end of the day.
So is that process a one-to-one process? Are we talking, in your mind, are we talking about ABM in some way? Or are we talking about market segment, market vertical, key demographic, persona, trying to create a, there's a lot of people that look like, that are at these types of companies that look, are in this type of a role. So what is that person's, that persona's journey? Mm-hmm. Are you talking about an individual or are you talking about, you know, a persona?
Well, I'm talking about individuals.
Okay.
And then working my way backwards to maybe making more of an attempt to automate things if possible. But that's a second priority. The first priority is understanding who these people are specifically. Starting with your customers, the ones you have now, talking to them, finding out how they got there, where they went, where they are going, you know, all that stuff. You know, so you're collecting data. It's not like this is not a data thing, but it's not a volume. It's not an average. It's not a segment. It's a person by person thing. And then what your job is to find other people who match, who are very similar on a similar path and treat them with that same journey map. So there is a little bit of personifying going on here, but it's tied to the person. It's not tied to the average. It's not tied to the volume. So that's the difference. It's like ABM, except ABM starts with, I already know who these people are, and now I'm going to go find them. So it's subtle, you know. What I'm talking about is, well, maybe you don't know who they are. You know who your customers are. You're going to try to find similar people. So in a way, that's like an ideal customer profile. But you're not treating them that way. You're not hitting them. You know, you're helping them through their journey as opposed to prospecting them.
So when you're, if someone has never created a customer journey map for their business before, step one is identify some of your ideal clients, some of the people that you'd like to have more customers that look like them. Would that be the first step?
At different positions within the account. So that, you know, you'd have your champion.
Okay.
You'd have their boss. Maybe it's a CMO, maybe it's a CEO. You'd have whoever the other stakeholders are in a mid-sized company and you're selling software, the IT people are going to get involved. The CFO, you know, you have budget constraints. So whoever's involved in that buying process, those people are going to be on your team that you're marketing to and selling to.
So you identify all of those roles, those individuals within your client, your current client, and then map out the journey for each of them.
Exactly. Each one has its own individual journey map.
So when you're doing this work, who needs to be in the room? If I'm an organization, if I'm a business leader and I want to map out customer journey, and maybe I've identified 5 or 10 individuals that we want to map out the journey for, right, who do I need to have as a part of that, that mapping process? Who should be in the room with me?
Anyone who knows that individual part of the journey. So it might start with marketing. It might graduate to sales. It will certainly, if they become customers, it'll graduate to customer success. But it also might involve product. You know, they might be going back and forth with product people. It might involve finance to some extent. I don't know if there's a big negotiation that goes on. Maybe there's safety involved if it's a manufacturing product. So it's really anyone who has a stake in that journey and needs to, and has information that they can bring forward. And, you know, you can't involve the whole company in this. So you have to be somewhat prudent about that. But I'd say the 3, 4, 5 key stakeholders from your point of view, the people that interact with those customers, those people need to be in the room.
So we alluded to it a little bit here, but I want to ask directly. So we've got 10 customer journey maps created. We've gone through the process. We really have an understanding of the different types of people, the different individuals, to use your point, the different individuals that we've worked with in the past or that we want to work with in the future. And we've mapped out their journey. Now I have this resource. How do I use it to help my business grow?
Right. So there's several things. The first one is everyone alludes to is alignment. And alignment typically means, okay, sales and marketing have their own processes and we agree to share the information that we're doing, the way we're doing things, and try to, you know, sync them up, right? Maybe the same with sales and customer success. They have some sort of alignment. But alignment is more than that. Alignment is about aligning all those processes to the customers. So the first important benefit of doing this is aligning on your customers. You have a customer journey map. You know where each component each person in your process comes in, becomes involved. And you can also map things like content and data and technology and metrics. You can see all of those things and how they relate to the customer journey and start planning, start organizing. So here's what happens when they sign up for a demonstration. Boom, it goes through a flow chart. Everybody knows kind of who they're, you know, who's involved, who's doing what happens when they make a decision in the positive and the negative, so that you're not missing opportunities and you're making sure that you touch them regardless of what they do. So let's say you have a sales meeting, you know, you're kind of in the middle of the journey. And they say, you know, we're not going to touch this for another 6 months. So then what happens? Do you just recycle them and just forget about them? Or do you send them back through a marketing funnel, so to speak, a marketing pathway to keep them in touch, or a sales pathway? You know, what happens next? Do you send them some content? Do you keep them in the loop? And what happens if they come back and visit the website? Are you going to just start bombarding them with top of the funnel kind of demo requests and things? Or are you going to treat them like you know who they are already and route them to the person that they were talking to in the first place? So you're tailoring your entire experience, their entire experience, to where they've been. And they'll appreciate that. They'll say, oh, well, that's cool. They know who I am. They're not going to send me a bunch of stuff I've already seen. They're going to treat me like, hey, are you ready now? Do you want to go further? Or is there something else we can provide you that will help? You know, so it's personalized experience by virtue of this customer journey mapping.
So not everyone will have the benefit, although I know you'd love to help people do this. But for the ones that go on and try to do it on their own, you've created some resources and templates and things. Yeah. Tell me about, you know, about that process of creating these templates to make it easy for organizations to do this on their own.
Well, it's not easy. It never
easier.
Let's get that out. Yeah. So you have to try to understand that, first of all, this whole process, as I've described it, is quite complex. You know, you might have six, eight people involved on your end. You might have six, eight people involved on their end. So, you know, that's a lot of permutations right there. But then all the different things that they do in the journey, so it gets quite complex. So the first thing you should try to do is understand what their journey is, as in a somewhat simplified way. And you could just put post-its up on a whiteboard. You know, you don't have to have technology for this, and just try to map that journey out, and it'll start revealing gaps in your coverage. It'll start revealing places where they get confused and they get hung up, and they, you know, if you're really talking about this honestly as a group, then these things are going to start surfacing themselves. So you're going to get immediate benefits. That's probably the first thing you need to do, is think about this journey, come up with that low-hanging fruit. What's broken right now that we can fix? And then you get more and more sophisticated. So this is where software might come in. And I use Lucidchart, which is just a nice, simple graphical tool for building flow charts and org charts and things like that. So it's an easy way of kind of representing a relatively complex structure of things. And then the more sophisticated it gets, let's say they go into the middle of this journey and they're in the sales process and there's multiple things that could be done depending on where they are in the journey. So you might break out into another level of processes and stuff like that. So that's all stuff that you need to do digitally to really make sense out of. But starting off, you know, I would just bust it out on a whiteboard and scribble it up there and just start shooting darts at it, you know, trying to understand where we are. Are we really covering the journey? Are they happy with this? And do we know? If we don't know, let's go find out. Let's go back to the CRM and check out the notes on these different customers and see how they thought about different things. And if we don't know that, let's get on the phone with them. You know, let's talk about this stuff. So it, if nothing else, it stimulates kind of a rethinking of the way we treat our customers and stimulates ideas for how we might immediately start turning things around.
So this is less about a sales and marketing process than it is a framework for how you're going to support your customers from start to finish.
Exactly. And that's the exactly sales, what it is.
Right. So there are things that go on, you know, from an awareness standpoint that you might be doing for that customer that before there's ever an engagement, and there's things that you might do after they stop being a customer.
Yes.
That might also sit in that journey. And then of course, in the middle there, there's marketing, sales, and execution or operations, right? Exactly. So it can be a complete, you know, process. It's a very long continuum. I think a lot of times when we think customer journey, a lot of people think marketing, sales, customer experience. They think of that. And what I'm hearing you say is there's a lot of work on the edges on both ends of that.
Yes.
That needs to be understood and can have an impact on the business and on the client's experience with your organization.
We all know this, you know, when we visit a website or maybe we go visit a place, you know, back in the old days, we know when they know who we are. We know when they treat us, you know, with at least having done their homework. They know our names, you know, we know that experience is a winner and it, you know, maybe they take us out to eat or whatever it is. So what we're trying to do is do the same thing kind of at the digital level, you know, not automatically, but we're trying to make it more automatic so that we lose fewer opportunities to make them happy, basically.
So what's the gotcha? When someone starts this process, where do you see people get stuck and throw up their hands? Where are some of those points where the team says, well, I don't know if we're doing this right. Like maybe we got off track somewhere. Where are some of those things?
Well, the big one is letting go of your silo. So you've got to come into that room prepared to be honest about what is and isn't working and be prepared to throw that away and think about things a different way. If you're not there, if you're trying to defend your territory, then it's just going to be a big argument. It's just going to be, well, we've never done things that way. And that we know that's not going to work. You know, that kind of attitude is not going to work. And it happens a lot, you know, because we're trained to think that way. We're trained to defend our little territory and be in our little silo and do things the way we do them. And if we're the ones that invented it, you know, we're the leaders of each little cadre, we ain't letting go. You know, you're going to adapt to my way of thinking. So, you know, it can get ugly, and it often does.
So tell me about Customer Journey Maestro at the business and the website. So what do you guys offer and how do people engage with you you know, who is it for?
Well, let's start with the last question. It's for companies that have a question about their performance. It's not for startups, for example, that have this mission to, you know, go to Series A in 3 months. It's not for companies that have blinders on like that. I mean, I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. I'm just saying they're not prepared to rethink the way they do their customers. You know, they don't have customers yet, right? I mean, so they're just trying to get as many as they can. And it's not so much about the customer journey in their minds. It's about their product. So no, I mean, I think those people need to wait until they have a product base, they're growing, and they're just, now they're kind of, maybe they're in the mid range of maturity, and they're questioning the way things work now, and maybe could we improve? So that's kind of the target. You know, it's not some, probably going to be an enterprise company, because they are so siloed typically that there's just no way to get going. So it's probably a mid-range company that's grown to a certain extent, and now they're looking longer term. So what we do is we like to start simple, like I was talking about before. So let's start with some customer journey maps, and let's just start with one customer journey map. You know, who's your champion at your ideal customer profile? Let's map that experience out and let's see if we can identify some quick wins. And so my job personally is to help them with that if they want help. They may have a person who's already kind of bought into this process and wants to champion this and is just having trouble sort of getting the mapping part of it done. So they can download templates, they can work from there. You know, it just saves a lot of time because they don't have to think about how to build these maps. But I also provide help. I could, you know, sort of substitute for that person to help them get that process going. That's kind of it. I'm not trying to conquer the world here, just kind of trying to help people get over the hump with getting customer journeys on the board and, you know, starting to analyze them.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, it's a really interesting solution. You know, as you mentioned earlier, there's a lot of people doing really well, you know, picking a specific point in time, a specific problem, and helping try to solve that one single problem really, really well. And so it looks like you found a spot that's so fundamental and foundational to everything else that will happen. It's a great place to for people to start figuring out, how do we become a better business? And if we become a better business, how do we, that means we keep customers longer, we attract more customers to our business, and ultimately that should lead to growth. A better business should lead to growth.
Right.
If you're not growing, you're dying. In business, there really isn't such a thing as status quo or plateau. You're either slowly dying or slowly getting better, or quickly dying or quickly getting better and growing. So I think understanding who your customers are and the journey that they go through is a foundational piece to really helping people build stronger and better and more growth oriented businesses. So I'm really excited about what you're doing.
Me too. Thank you very much. And I look forward to working with you too, and you know, seeing where this goes.
Absolutely. So how can people find you, John? What's the best way for people to get in touch with you?
Well, I would visit the website first, which is www.customerjourneymaestro.com. If you want to get in touch with me, LinkedIn is the best place. So I'm just LinkedIn.com/JMCTIGUE, JMCTIGUE. Just connect up and we'll start talking. You know, that's the easiest thing to do.
Perfect. I would encourage everyone to connect with John. He puts out a lot of really great content. I think he publishes a lot on LinkedIn. It's probably one of the main places he likes to publish these days.
I send it to everybody. It's fantastic.
Yeah. It's he's a great resource to have in your network and someone that you ought to keep an eye on. So look, thanks so much, John. I really appreciate your time joining us on the Big Three of B2B Leadership and our podcast today. It's been a lot of fun talking with you. Folks, if you haven't reached out to John yet, please do so and get connected with him there and check out Customer Journey Maestro. Look, John, have a great day, and we look forward to talking with you again soon.
Great. Appreciate it. Thanks, Mike.
All right, thanks.
Pro Sales Connection is a sales and marketing firm that has been helping B2B companies grow faster since 2009. Learn more about our proprietary fastest path to revenue process for B2B companies. Experiencing the possibilities begins with a short 15-minute call. Schedule yours at www.prosalesconnection.com and click Get Started.